This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 27th of June 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 26th of June 2014, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The headlines this week in the Hampshire Chronicle are: Memorial to First World War Soldiers is unveiled, Blaze engulfs church, and Plans for Fire Station spark housing debate. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
Memorial to First World War Soldiers is unveiled. It was the final leg of a two-year project and a celebration of the county's servicemen and women. To mark the start of the annual Armed Forces Week, there was a flag-raising ceremony outside the Great Hall in Winchester, and the unveiling of a memorial to those who passed through Mournhill Camp during the First World War. On Monday, proceedings began with a selection of military music at the Buttercross by the band and bugles of the Rifles. Then they marched to St. Maurice's Covert, where they were met by a contingent of service personnel from the Royal Navy, Army and Royal Air Force. Together, they returned up the High Street to the Great Hall for the ceremony and unveiling of the To Honour a Promise Memorial, which marks the centenary since the outbreak of the Great War in 1914. It sits at the base of the steps in the courtyard by the Great Hall, and throughout the ceremony was covered in a cloth made by textile students from Peter Simmons College. Designed by Simon Smith, the To Honour a Promise project has been 2 years in the making, and last month saw Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Dame Mary Fagan, officially unveil information boards at Mournhill. David Harrison, who has been at the project's forefront, said he felt elated to see the final piece of the puzzle come together. "It's great. I feel on top of the world and it couldn't be better," he said. "The memorial is different, but we think it's fitting and evocative." In his speech, he thanked all those involved, including Winchester City and Hampshire County Councils. Dame Mary also addressed the hundreds of onlookers, saying, "Today we remember the commitment of all those who serve in the regular forces and their families. Many of them are and will serve abroad, and may often be in personal danger. Hampshire is the home of all three services. Their families live here, their children go to our schools. They are a part of our community in every way." The Duke of Gloucester was presented with the Armed Forces flag, which was raised by a Hampshire cadet. He then unveiled the bench-like memorial, and the national anthem was played by the band and bugles of the Rifles. Children from St. Bede Primary School lined Castle Avenue and waved Union flags during the song. The permanent memorial represents the fulfilment of a promise made almost 100 years ago to honour the American troops who passed through Winchester's Mournhill Camp between 1917 and 1919. Mr. Harrison said that it remembers all troops, not just American allies. County Council leader, Councillor Roy Perry, said, "There are 30,000 military personnel based in Hampshire, the largest contingent in the country, and we are immensely proud of our strong connection with the armed forces. This year's ceremony holds special significance as we celebrate the centenary of the First World War, as well as commemorating earlier this month the 70th anniversary of D-Day. At such a time, it is only fitting that we share our gratitude for the contributions and sacrifices of the armed forces community and all they do to protect and serve this country.
Blazing Gulf's Church. Power surges preceded blaze. Residents of Ropley have rallied in support after a devastating fire ripped through their 800-year-old church. St. Peter's was engulfed last Thursday, destroying centuries-old architecture and fittings, including a 16th-century font. The cause is still unknown, although there is speculation after parishioners reported electrical surges in the hours leading up to the blaze. An investigation is underway, and the Reverend Royston Such, vicar for 24 years, said it could be weeks before its results are revealed. "I was told by the forensic people we shouldn't expect to hear anything for 3 or 4 weeks. The tower is very dangerous. You can't go inside," he says. He estimates the cost of repair to be £2.5 million, but says donations have already been flooding in. People are responding in financial terms, but also with love, and that is the only word for it, he said. "Last week, I was saying they were devastated and heartbroken, and that was true. I had people in tears. The church means so much to them. One has to remember it is there for those times when something poignant happens, and it's then that something goes to your very spirit." The blaze destroyed the roof, organ, memorial plaques, much of the bell tower, records dating to the 1960s, and the pulpit given in memory of the 19th century vicar Samuel Maddock. Friends of St. Peter's held their AGM on Friday. 50 attended, and Parkstone Road resident Andy Bonner was elected to oversee communications for the rebuilding process. He said, "It was really good to see people come together at the meeting. It's a terrible circumstance, but it's good that everybody in the village wants to pull together and help get something done." The AGM and summer party raised £1,000, which will be added to the £83,000 the Friends have already banked. The Reverend Tana Riviere, Mr. Such's wife, paid tribute to the villagers' continuing efforts. "They have been wonderful, so supportive and heart-stricken themselves. It has been very touching. If you can say anything good has come from a tragedy, it's people's recognitions and responses," she said. Eyewitness Terry Nielsen of Vicarage Lane said, "I came up to get a newspaper, smell smoke, so wandered down out of curiosity and saw this. The church has been at the heart of the village for 800 years. Hopefully the stone will be saved." At its height, 100 firefighters tackled the blaze with 12 engines, 3 water carriers, a special equipment unit, commercial unit and 8 senior officers. Officer in charge, Steve Foy, said, "This was a significant fire that has seriously affected a prominent building in the village. Crews worked hard in arduous conditions to bring it under control. We'd like to thank the community for their support during this time." Southern Electric said it did not believe the fire was linked to the power cut that affected Ropley, Alsford and Cheriton last Wednesday night. A spokeswoman said she understood the fire started in the roof and that the church was served by a different part of the network than the 1,300 homes affected by the cuts.
Plans for fire stations spark housing debate. A former Winchester fire station has brought civic chiefs under scrutiny over the issue of affordable housing. The site at North Walls, which was closed in 2011, is to be demolished to make way for 16 homes, comprising 6 four-bedrooms, 6 three-bedroom, 4 two-bedroom houses, including 2 semi-detached two-bed bungalows. But councillors were unhappy that there is no affordable housing in the scheme. Councillor Ian Tate, the reappointed portfolio holder for housing, said, Whilst I wholeheartedly support the proposals, I cannot support our policies on this particular application. We are striving for higher quality houses over affordable ones. We, as a body, have made a clear determination, and it's very sad, that affordable housing is less important than achieving a higher code of sustainability. We have to revise our policies if all that we do is cement money over and above affordable housing.
That concludes the headline stories. Just to say, if you hear any extraneous noises during this recording, it's because at the studio there is scaffolding outside and they're doing some repair work and painting. So if there are any sort of bangs and things like that, I'm afraid it's out of our control. But just to let you know that we're not falling about in the studio ourselves. We now move on to the death announcements. Benson, Marie Victoria Benson, on the 20th of June, aged 94. Bulpet, Kathleen Bulpet, at home on the 13th of June, aged 101. Crawford, Julie Dorothy Crawford, at home on the 23rd of June. Dunford, Lillian May Dunford, née Smith, on the 19th of June, at home, aged 90. Fensom, Paula Fensom, on the 15th of June. King, Kathleen Carmel King, on the 13th of June, aged 83. Kirby, Nellie Edith Kirby, on the 18th of June, aged 95. Martin, George Edward Martin, on the 20th of June, at home. Nash, Clifford Smith Nash, in hospital on the 13th of June, aged 63. Selby, Barbara Selby, in the Countess Mountbatten Hospice, on the 15th of June. Weston, Laura May Weston, on the 17th of June, aged 22. And now we have Christian comment.
This week it's written by Canon Rowley Ream, and he entitles it A True Fit with Our Deepest Values. Once upon a time, everyone knew that beans could only mean one thing. Then supermarkets started selling their own labels beside the household brands, considerably cheaper. You're only paying for the advertising, became the mantra in our family, though in the case of baked beans, we remained loyal to our first love. Branding has now touched every facet of our lives. Even Winchester Cathedral has its own logo, strapline and colour palette. We hope it gives viewers some sense of what we have to offer, including the beautifully illustrated 12th century Bible, worked into the logo. We have a visual culture, and first impressions are important. But brands can hide a lack of substance. We all have our views about why the England football team found it so hard to rise to the challenge of the World Cup. But probably one of the main reasons is that something branded English football is actually hardly English at all, but an international game played on English soil. If we want to do better in 2018, the money being made through our brand will have to be used to bring on the playing of football in clubs and schools. The Premier League will have to be encouraged further not to reach for foreign players to buy their success. This is easier said than done when failure has such immediate and drastic consequences for managers and teams. Brands are neither good nor bad in themselves. It's the substance behind them that counts for happiness. Happiness results from a true fit with our deepest values. Most of us want to be reassured that being English means something solid and resonates with our own traditions, whether sporting or otherwise. But to be happy means ready to step beyond branding. Christians have done this by taking time out each day to meditate on things unseen and finding their satisfaction by connecting with realities not easily expressed in words and images. The strapline of the cathedral offers a hint about this. Beauty beyond. This is a discipline, and honestly, sometimes hard work. But in the experience of many believers, it does open the way for remarkable encounters with God. And if God does exist, the one thing would expect is that he or she will be all substance and no glitz, beyond all tidy branding or packaging.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or by writing to the editor in the traditional way at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We have 11 letters this week. The first three concern the Silver Hill development. The next three, the Bullington Cross Wind Farm. The next three about the general state of Winchester, and then the final two are on unrelated subjects. So we'll start off with the first letter.
And this comes from Marion Brown, Mrs. Marion Brown, and it's headed, "Please go back to the drawing board." "Sir, I wish to register support for a return to the drawing board to get the right scheme for Silver Hill. I am housebound, but I have been horrified by the photographs that have been put online of new buildings in and around the city. I was born in Winchester 67 years ago, and it has become a place I no longer recognise. Its whole character has been eroded by the new buildings that have unfortunately gone up. One example is the now defunct Winchester and Cycle Motor Company building that was opposite the library in Jury Street. In its place is a building that does not match the colour of the library and completely overwhelms it by its design and size. I've looked at the document which informs us about the new Silver Hill development and am horrified at what is planned. It would seem that all our streets will be turned into wind tunnels by the high-rise buildings which will be on either side of the roads. This is not London, but our lovely Winchester, with its quaint buildings, which most people I come into contact with still want, not straight up-and-down buildings, some with pointy roofs. These are horrible and should never have been allowed in the first place." And that comes from Mrs. Marion Brown of Winchester.
"The case against Silver Hill scheme," writes Rupert Pitt. "Sir, recent letters, City Councillor Kim Gottlieb has produced a very good web page showing how bad the designs for the redevelopment of Silver Hill, Winchester, are. It is simple and easy to read for the layman and less detailed than the scholarly objections raised by Robert Adam in 2012. It is particularly worth reading for the comments on the excessive height, poor quality of the architecture, facade, usage and the lack of consultation process, amongst other topics. Please email your councillor with objections." That's from Rupert Pitt, Stony Lane, Winchester.
"Rethink this scheme before it's too late," writes Francis Griffiths. "Sir, we wholeheartedly agree with Kim Gottlieb's excellent report on the deception being foisted on us at Silver Hill by Henderson, the developers, with a seemingly tacit nod from our council, which contains disturbing elements that had passed us by, such as roof heights, amenity spaces, and flawed design. Everyone accepts the area needs to change, as it is an eyesore. But it doesn't need more retail shops, nor does Winchester really need more cafes, pubs or restaurants. A scheme which makes the most of the stunning meandering river tributaries, creating open piazzas and greener spaces, with affordable housing built to an appropriate height relative to the cathedral, and other lovely old buildings, and in materials which reflect surrounding architecture. Flint, stone, wood would create a world-class finish to Winchester. Why not find space for a decent-sized performing arts centre, which Winchester badly needs, and provide a more permanent street market area, encouraging artisans to bring their work here? When we moved here 26 years ago, there were many more unusual small shops selling lovely things people wanted to buy. Much of that charm has been lost, and this will be a final nail in the coffin, putting off the many tourists who flock to our glorious city, attracted by its antiquity and architecture. A development like Silver Hill would never be tolerated in lovely towns and cities such as Ludlow, Verona or Chartres. Any councillor who thinks more high street style shops is a good idea is frankly both deluded and Luddite. Internet shopping is quick, reliable and more convenient now for those who are out all day. The days of old style retail high street shopping are almost over. We must persuade our councillors to demand a rethink for the scheme before it is too late. Francis Griffiths, Winchester.
No wind farm in my backyard, sadly. And this comes from J.J. Heath Caldwell. Sir, on Monday, June the 16th, the planners and councillors met to discuss the application by EDF to build a wind farm near Bullington Cross. The meeting was well attended and well run. The planning officer presented lots of simulations of how the proposed turbines would look, and in each case showed that you could hardly see them. In fact, he had to zoom in just so we could make them out. He then recommended that the wind farm not be approved, as it would adversely affect, among other views, that of Winchester Cathedral, about 10 miles away. The meeting lasted from 10 a.m. until 6:30 p.m., most of it spent on concerns about the look of the wind farm. Sadly, there was almost no discussion about global warming, climate change, and the detrimental effect that this could have on future generations. Parish councillors all said words to the effect that it would be a blot on the landscape. The council members then voted in majority against the application. The council has a written policy of encouraging renewable energy projects. This application was possibly the most popular ever made in the UK, with 2,845 letters of support to the council. Personally, I would have loved to see a row of 14 wind turbines on the hills overlooking the A34 and A303. They would then have generated renewable electricity for 13,000 homes, and we would be burning less gas and less coal. I would urge all members in our community to let their councillors know that most of us want action on climate change, not lots of talk and total inaction. And that's from J.J. Heath Caldwell, Moorcroft Close, Sutton Scotney.
And the second letter on the Bullington Cross Wind Farm is written by Karen Barrett, and it's headed, "Nimbys be wary of what they wish for." Sir, coming so soon after the City Council endorsed its commitment to a low carbon economy, the decision of Winchester's Planning Committee to refuse the application for a wind farm at Bullington Cross suggests the authority is good at talking the talk, but its planners, with one exception, have not got the courage of their alleged convictions. I was amazed that when it came to the vote, the members stated concerns for the future of the planet, their children and their grandchildren, were deemed less important than the visual impact of the turbines on the Hampshire countryside. The objection of Chilbolton Observatory relating to the technical impact could have been dealt with by condition, as was suggested by Basingstoke Councillor, and the MOD concerns related more to the area being of relatively congested aviation activity, which is not an issue for planning committees. Much of the public objection related to loss of views and impact on house prices, but it was not pointed out that these are not material planning considerations and should be disregarded. There is much in the report, and to some extent in the conduct of the meeting, which could be challenged, so I hope this decision is appealed. It is, however, worrying that the government seems to have given up on renewable energy in favour of fracking. Hampshire NIMBYs should be careful what they wish for. That was written by Karen Barrett of Byron Avenue, Winchester.
And continuing the theme, Jenny Stable says, power has to come from somewhere. Sir, power has to be generated somewhere, and Hampshire residents use more than most. If opponents of the Bullington Cross wind farm don't want it in their neighbourhood, then I don't suppose they'd want a nuclear waste dump, energy-producing incinerator, fracking company, solar farm, or anything else. But they could halve their energy consumption to help balance the energy deficit. Jenny Stables, Gordon Avenue, Winchester.
Why is Winchester looking so shabby? Well, this comes from Mrs. M. Compton. Sir, I have just returned home following a visit to Winchester and feel I must bring to attention a visitor's view regarding the deterioration of the landscaping in and around the city. It is over 3 years since I was last here, and I can't believe how run down things are looking with regards to ground maintenance and the sweeping of footpaths. In some places I saw weeds 4 feet high, while the grass in the park areas doesn't look as though it has been cut for some time, and where it has, the finish is terrible. Grass on approach roads is so high, vision is blocked, so one can't see vehicles coming. I understand that Winchester City Council has a new contractor. I suggest they get in their cars and drive around and see for themselves what a poor state things have got into through their shoddy workmanship. I hope the contractor does not have the nerve to put in a charge to the council, whose tenants and taxpayers must be seething, as they are certainly not getting value for money. From Mrs. M. Compton, Hemingford Grey, Huntingdon.
And on the same subject is from Jenny Waddington. What does it take to keep the city clean? Just what does it take to clean up litter? My 74-year-old mother was so disgusted by the huge amount of sordid waste, ironically very close to the rubbish depot, that she took it upon herself to clean it up. She felt that all the strewn litter was a very poor example to the many visitors visiting our beautiful city. Surely a bin would be a good start, followed by a weekly litter pick. Is this really so hard to achieve? Jenny Waddington, Bar End, Winchester.
Time we banned all bossy signs, says Pip Billington. Sir, is a campaign underway to make St. Cross look like a suburb of Detroit? A plethora of estate agent boards is visible in every street. Our population is not migrating. These boards advertise the agent's support for local causes. Brackets in very tiny writing. End bracket. The cricket club is ablaze with boards advertising events, and even the roundabouts are laden with advertising. A walk in the water meadows is spoilt by bossy signs from Hampshire Wildlife Trust issuing patronising instructions not to cycle, unleash the dog, and mind the cows. Driving in through Garnier Road, you are greeting with 6 consecutive warning signs that the road gets narrower. Enough is enough. Our local environment is being spoilt. We should not allow advertising in the streets, and all bossy signs should be banned. Pip Billington, Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
An undercurrent of anti-Semitism from Keith's story. Sir, Mr. Hable's letter of the Chronicle of June the 12th, re the screening of a film with an anti-Israel bias at a Winchester church, was disturbing. Having also seen anti-Israel displays in our high street and comments in local newspapers, I think perhaps there is still an undercurrent of anti-Semitism. After all, since Israel is the historic homeland of the Jewish people, it is difficult not to suspect that bias against Israel is also bias against Jewish people. Accepting that there have been some human rights abuses of Arabs living in Israel and territory occupied by Israel, it is probably less than human rights abuses in Russia, China, India, Venezuela, and numerous other countries. We should perhaps give Israel more latitude in how it deals with problems, considering how Jewish people were expelled from their homeland and suffered almost 1,900 years of discrimination and persecution, including by Britain, before regaining their homeland. Recent discussions on British values have often focused on our Christian tradition. However, we should not forget Christianity and later Islam had their origins in the Jewish faith, and we should all respect each other. Many of today's Middle East problems stem from 1967, when all Arab countries surrounding Israel tried to destroy it. But Israel won that war, gaining additional territory that might be regarded as legitimate spoils of war, or a necessary buffer against continuing outside aggression. I'd like more human rights for Palestinians within Israeli-controlled territory in exchange for acceptance of a greater Israeli state and an end to kidnappings and killings of Israeli Jews. Meanwhile, I am thankful for Jewish doctors who saved my daughter's life, Jewish businessmen who helped my career, Jewish lawyers who won my court cases, the Jewish friend who offered me a zero-interest loan, and the Muslim religious leader who gave hospitality and a live turkey for Christmas. And that comes from Keith's story, St. Cross Road, Winchester.
Long-term impact of war will remain, writes Alec Brown. Sir, on Armed Forces Day, June the 28th, we celebrate the military community within Hampshire. It has special significance in a year which marks so many military milestones. We are about to commemorate the centenary of the start of the Great War. We have just paid tribute to the 70th anniversary of D-Day, and we expect to see, by the end of this year, British troops home from Afghanistan. All have left a significant legacy, which the SSAFA is proud to honour. SSAFA was the only national military charity in Hampshire to have served our armed forces community throughout all of these wars. Although we may be moving into a more peaceful period, the long-term impact of war will remain. We have recently been reminded of our D-Day veterans and are soon to be reminded of the lost generations of World War I. We don't know how those who have served in more recent conflicts will cope as time goes on, but we know they will need us as surely as those who fought in conflicts past. Each year, SSAFA Hampshire supports around 1,260 veterans of all ages, but we are already seeing growing numbers of younger veterans coming forward with problems that are increasingly complex. If you would like to help or would like to volunteer to help our local military community, you can contact SSAFA Hampshire at 023 8062 0900, that's 023 8062 0900, or secretary at hampshiressafa.org.uk. And it is written by Alec Brown, who is the awareness member for SSAFA Hampshire Branch Executive Committee.
That concludes the letters. We don't have any items of historical interest this week, so we will go straight on to the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment.
A century on, the promise is kept. This August sees the centenary of the outbreak of the First World War, otherwise known as the Great War, the war to end all wars. That an estimated 1,200 attended the official service in Winchester Cathedral on Sunday is testament to the grip it still holds, although it must inevitably begin to wane as the children of that wartime generation themselves pass away. Winchester has always been good at remembering its past and creating things that help replace those memories. On Monday, the Honour a Promise project unveiled the permanent memorial for the soldiers who passed through the Mourne Hill camps on Downland, east of the city, between 1914 and 1918. The unusual memorial, a stone bench outside the Great Hall, honours the estimated million men who were billeted there and then marched down Magdalen Hill on their way to Southampton Docks, en route to the Western Front. It has taken nearly 100 years to fulfil the pledge made by the mayor in May 1919, 6 months after the war ended. It is right that it has been done, and especially fitting that it was a grassroots project of local people that initiated the project, raised the funds, and saw it through.
And now a piece from Alistair Marsden entitled How Stanmore Was Left Behind by the 21st Century. Walking back from an event at the Carroll Centre, I was reflecting on changes in Stanmore and its community spirit. You do need a thriving community to increase engagement, but you can't have it without increased engagement. How can we create the spark that can reverse the decline? A glance at measures of community well-being makes alarming reading. Whilst the statistics confirm that Stanmore is the most deprived area in the city district, the deterioration in relative deprivation between 2007 and 2010 is striking. The three areas that make up Stanmore are ranked as the first, third, and seventh most deprived of all 69 areas in the district. What is more, the national deprivation ranking of Stanmore has declined by 25% between 2007 and 2010. Put bluntly, the gap between rich and poor in Winchester is widening. The main drivers are income and education. Educational deprivation is particularly high and getting worse, with Stanmore North one of the 7% most deprived areas nationally in 2010. The three areas of Stanmore rank lower than even the most educationally deprived area of Hackney or Islington. I have made inquiries with the council as to the reasons. They are not sure, though at least one seems obvious: the decline in facilities since 2000. That was the year I moved to Stanmore. At that time, there were many enriching cultural activities that raised aspirations. The Tower Arts Centre staged music, comedy and theatre. We would walk to the Intech Science Centre. There were two pubs. The library was a regular stop-off. I've spoken to many long-time residents and they talk of village fetes, carnivals, even a thriving bowling club. Sadly, all have now disappeared. Could this be one of the reasons that community spirit is low? Investment is needed to replace lost infrastructure. This was the view of consultants commissioned for the recent planning framework. With plans for scores of new houses in the ward, to proceed without infrastructure investment first seems inconceivable. But investment alone is not enough. How do we ensure it yields results? These are complex questions, and I do not pretend to know the answers. What I do know is that Winchester as a whole has a rich community heritage and has been well served by the great institutions that underpin it and its political leaders. Perhaps the answers lie in how we work with these institutions and leaders to reverse the decline.
And now the week's announcements. A few items of what's going to be happening in and around Winchester over the next month or so. The Hampshire Fair Food Festival will take place from the 1st of July to the 30th of August at the Leckford Estate at Stockbridge. The Romsey Festival is on from the 4th of July to the 20th of July. The Winchester Hat Fair is on from the 4th of July to the 6th of July. The Winchester Festival of the Arts is on from July the 4th to July the 13th. And the New Forest Show is on from July the 29th to the 31st of July. I'm sure if you want any more information about any of these events, the best thing will be to either call in at the tourist office on the Broadway or to give them a phone call. The phone number of the tourist office is 01962 840 500. That's 01962 840 500. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 27th of June, the sun rose at 10 to 5 in the morning and will set at 25 past 9 in the evening. And Wednesday of next week, 2nd of July, sun rises at 5 to 5 in the morning and sunset is again around 25 past 9 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. There is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it, but please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. We now move on to the items of general news interest.
And the first one is headed Blaze Fails to Stop Couple Tying Knot. A couple whose wedding looked in doubt as their church burned happily tied the knot. I'll read that again. A couple whose wedding looked in doubt as their church burned happily tied the knot 48 hours later. Darren and Alicia Bunce were due to marry in St Peter's Church, but were horrified when it caught fire just 2 days before on Thursday. After some quick rearranging, they married on Saturday as planned, but in nearby parish, Bishop's Sutton at St Nicholas Church.
And continuing that theme, I have an article here. This will bring the village together. Chris Burton, age 66, retired of Church Street, Ropley, said, "I think it's going to be rebuilt. I hope over the next few days of the church authorities will be able to give us some indication of what the way forward is." Linda Buckland, age 66, retired church warden of St Peter's of Ashbury Road, Borden, said, "It's just not real. I've been coming here for 30 years, and I have friends who have been married or buried here. It doesn't feel real. This village will fight. It will do a phoenix and rise up." That sounds corny, but I really believe that something good will come out of it. Roger Wood, age 62, carpenter of the Dean, Ropley, said, "It's very upsetting. I've been in the village all my life, and I was working in the village when somebody said, 'The church is on fire.' The register book came straight to mind. It has every christening and marriage in it. And it sounds daft because it's such a small thing, but my children were christened there, and that record is gone. This will bring the village together." And Barbara Burton, age 63, retired of Church Street, Ropley, said, "I was terrified yesterday that our thatch was going to catch fire, and I'm very upset about it. I'm on the Friends Committee of the church, and I'm going to be fully involved in trying to get the church rebuilt. And this article is accompanied by a colour photograph of local residents standing by the wall in front of the burnt-out church, looking rather sad, but very determined that something will come out of it and it'll all be rebuilt.
And now on a different matter, service remembers the First World War. More than 1,200 people packed Winchester Cathedral on Sunday to mark the centenary of the outbreak of the First World War. Among the dignitaries to attend the Hampshire County First World War Centenary Service were Second Sea Lord Vice Admiral David Steele and the Army's Commander Land Forces Lieutenant General Sir Nicholas Carter, along with the principal guest, Dame Mary Fagan, the county's Lord Lieutenant. There were also many serving and former servicemen at the service. It is the major county event to mark the start of the Great War in August 1914, which killed nearly 1 million British and Empire servicemen. The service started with a fanfare of silver bugles, played by the band and bugles of the Rifles, with prayers led by the Armed Forces Chaplain General, Reverend Jonathan Woodhouse. There were readings by Dame Mary Fagan and Lieutenant General Sir Nicholas Carter, Commander Land Forces. In a poignant close to the service, a lone piper from 19 Regiment Royal Artillery, the Scottish Gunners, led a procession of Hampshire young people and cadets out of the church.
Cathedral bells toll a sombre anniversary. Prior to the Hampshire County Council Great War Centenary service in Winchester Cathedral on Sunday, that's June the 22nd, the bells pealed specially to mark the sombre anniversary. The Guild Memorial to 56 ringers from 36 churches across the old, that's the 1914 diocese, who fell in battle, stands in the corner of the belfry, and a team of ringers from across the county and beyond rang a quarter peal of 1,342 changes of the Grandsire Sonk, conducted by Stephen Noyes of Brystone, Isle of Wight. A short service was led by the Canon Precentor, the Reverend Susan Wallace, as ringers from Guildford, Portsmouth, Winchester, Sees represented the towers listed on the memorial.
Steam engine driver leaves villagers dry. Southern Water is searching for a traction steam engine driver after he left villages without water. The driver of the slow-moving steam engine left several homes in Itchen Abbas near Winchester with no supply after a hydrant was tampered with. In a statement on Tuesday, Southern Water said, "This is an unusual situation and we will be carrying out an investigation. Part of that will be to find, hopefully, the person or company involved so we can speak to them about the use of hydrants and explain the risks." The engine trundles along at about 5 miles per hour, but the identity of the driver was unavailable. Several homes lost their water supply after a steam engine driver tampered with a hydrant. It is understood the driver stopped to get water for the engine in Little Hayes Lane last Friday evening, but accidentally damaged the hydrant, causing a leak. 10 homes lost their supply for around 40 minutes, while Southern Water engineers raced to the scene and fixed the hydrant. Police were also called, but the engine had left by the time they arrived, and a spokesman confirmed that they were not taking the matter further. It is understood the engine was on its way to a steam fair.
Man died from heroin overdose. Inquest, 43-year-old had history of mental illness. A Winchester man who was sent to a secure mental hospital after killing his girlfriend died from a drug overdose, an inquest heard. Daniel Grant, who had a history of mental illness and drug use, had been sent to Ravenswood House after admitting causing the death of Catherine Ogram in 2002. He was released on condition that he did not use drugs, but was found dead in a flat in Winchester last year after taking heroin. An inquest in Southampton heard that the 43-year-old was sent to Ravenswood House in 2003 after admitting manslaughter on the grounds of diminished responsibility.
All's Fair at Produce Show at Westminster, and fair is spelt F-A-R-E. County producers show their best to MPs. Some of Hampshire's top food producers had the chance to take their products to the heart of government. Members of Hampshire Fair set up stalls in the precincts of the House of Parliament itself to tempt the taste buds of MPs and officials as they went about their governing the nation. Parliament was chosen as the ideal place to put on the map such delicious delights as yummy chocolate treats, scrummy marshmallows, sumptuous cakes and tangy cheeses, as well as beers and wines from the region. The event was initiated by Caroline Noakes, MP for Romsey and Southampton North, with the support of fellow MPs George Hollingbury, MP for the Mearn Valley, and Damien Hines, MP for East Hampshire, and organised by the county's food group, Hampshire Fair. Ms Noakes welcomed everyone to the event, to which she had also invited all of her elected colleagues. Hampshire County Council leader Roy Perry spoke of his pride in the produce created in his home county and welcomed guests to the event that was attended by several local MPs, including Winchester's Steve Brine. The event was part of Hampshire Fair's campaign to raise the profile of Hampshire at national level as a food-producing county and as a holiday destination.
Scouts prepared to upcycle. Winchester Scouts have been busy upcycling unwanted items as part of their quest to help the local community. 29 beavers, cubs and scouts from the 3rd Winchester Unit, better known as the Worthies, helped Lanterns Nursery School and Children's Centre in Week build a greenhouse alongside parents, carers and helpers. It was made from 1,500 2-litre plastic drinks bottles, held together with timber donated by Hampshire County Council Countryside Services. After 9 hours of hard work, they were left with a functional greenhouse the centre can use to teach children about planting and growing their own fruit and vegetables. The project also promotes recycling and was part of the recent Scout Community Week.
Energy Centre plans rejected. Developers received a blow after civic chiefs rejected controversial plans for an energy centre near Winchester. The plant would have seen 150,000 tonnes of waste taken by 15,000 lorries per year to the site off Overton Road, Mitchell River Station. It would operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and produce 7.6 megawatts of electricity. Clean Power Properties said the move would create up to 30 permanent jobs and 180 construction positions. Hampshire County Council planning officers had recommended rejection on the grounds it would be intrusive and damage local ecology. 13 councillors voted to reject, 1 to approve and 1 abstained. A packed public gallery at last Wednesday's regulatory committee clapped after Nick Hurrell, a member of the Mitchell River Action Group, said, "The only financial beneficiaries of this would be private investors, not local residents. There has been no community involvement from the applicant over the past 2 years, and no one from Clean Power themselves has engaged with the local community. So what can be said about trust?" Adrian Bates, also of MAG, said, "Surely you cannot endorse an application that will make Mitchell Dever the waste capital of Wessex." Chris Herbert, on behalf of Clean Power Properties, urged councillors to reconsider. He said, "There is a continuing need for this kind of plant. it will provide up to 180 construction jobs and employ more than 25 full-time people. We have been working very hard to erase the issue of nature conservation. Mr. Hurrell said, "We are delighted that common sense planning has won. It was very clear it was going to blight the village of Mitchell devastation, and we are confident that we have sufficient evidence to continue fighting if need be." Clean Power Properties were unavailable for comment on whether they will appeal.
Beautiful bollards bring big smile to people's faces. These aren't just safety barriers, but hand-painted, personally sponsored safety barriers. For the last few years, bollards throughout the square have been meticulously crafted, donning all sorts of images sponsored by businesses throughout the district. And it's not a bad way to spend a sunny afternoon. Rachel Alexander and Jenny Muncaster, artists at the Colour Factory, have been commissioned by such businesses as Bang & Olufsen and Farrow & Ball to depict beautiful images on the otherwise dull and dreary black bollards. Rachel said, "It's been an amazing to turn something so mundane into works of art that are so loved by all who see them." Jenny said, "They really do bring a smile to people's faces, and the collection has turned the square into a real attraction. It is such a joy to paint them."
Roadworks lead to traffic chaos. Roadworks cause severe traffic disruption at a major Winchester junction. Contractors closed the road at the top of Stanmore Lane, at the junctions with Oliver's Battery Road North and Romsey Road last Thursday. It was part of work to improve the traffic lights and road layout at the notorious bottleneck. The disruption from resurfacing work angered local residents. Guy Cameron of Fairfax Close was effectively trapped in his own road. He said, "There is only one word to describe this: chaos. I think it's hysterical. People in the Oliver's Battery Road North cul-de-sac are effectively confined to barracks." St. Peter's Roman Catholic Primary School is on Oliver's Battery Road North. A spokesman said that the contractors had given the school plenty of notice, and parents have been told not to attempt to drive to the school. A spokesman said, "It's not ideal, but these roadworks have to be carried out, and they will make access so much easier. In the past, access has not been great, and so this will simplify life. All parents were told 2 weeks ago about the work and the limited access."
Prison chiefs under fire after inspection. Bosses at Winchester Prison have been criticised for failing to tackle violence and overcrowding. The criticisms were made by inspectors who visited the jail because they were seriously concerned about it. Their report, published on Tuesday, found too little had been done to improve the prison since a damning inspection in 2012. It was seriously overcrowded and operating at 35% above its certified capacity. The report, published on Tuesday, also states that some prisoners' progress had been set back because they had moved jails in the middle of training courses or other work addressing their behaviour. It also highlighted how the prison had started to hold young adults following the closure of Reading Young Offenders Institution and were struggling to manage them safely. Measures to cut violence were weak, and a bid to address the behaviour of bullies was ineffective, they found. Not enough thought was being put into managing the behaviour of the newly arrived young adults, who, the report concludes, were overrepresented in violent incidents. The segregation unit also continued to provide an unacceptably poor environment and regime. Inspectors singled out the management of learning and skills, the quality of provision and prisoners' achievements as all requiring improvement.
Lack of trust in energy suppliers. Half of households in the southeast of England do not trust their energy supplier. According to a survey, 35% of people said they did not understand their energy bill. 36% felt that their gas and electricity bills were not accurate, while 40% were worried that they were paying more for their energy than they consume. Yet 44% of people said they didn't think that they had enough information to choose the right tariff, and 39% said they didn't have enough information to choose a supplier. Research was conducted by the Smart Meter Central Delivery Body, which was created by the government to encourage people to install smart meters in their homes.
Duke catches up on dig news. The Duke of Gloucester heard the latest news on the search for the bones of King Alfred the Great on a visit to the University of Winchester on Monday. The Duke talked to archaeologists and members of Hyde 900 community group who initiated the project. Last January, the university and Hyde 900 made international headlines when they announced the discovery of a fragment of pelvic bone thought to belong to the Saxon king or his son Edward the Elder. The group now wants to reopen a dig at Hyde Abbey Garden where the bone was discovered.
Police station hours. The opening times of Winchester Police Station have changed. The North Wall Station is now open on Sundays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. instead of the current 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. The closure on Sundays between 2 to 2:45 p.m. remains, as does the opening times Monday to Saturday of 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Across Hampshire, some 16 stations continue to offer a front office service. As a result of low usage, the front offices at Totton and Ryde will close. New front offices will open a few days per week at Lyndhurst and Waterlooville to meet business and public need.
Room to get makeover thanks to Round Table. School children will finally be able to enjoy their new sensory room after a generous donation from a Winchester charity group. Shepherd's Down School in Compton was presented with a donation of £9,000 from the Round Table to finish its new light and sensory room aimed at improving the children's learning abilities. The contribution means that the work will go ahead as scheduled in August. Head teacher Jane Sansom said, "The children at Shepherd's Down have a variety of very complex learning and associated sensory difficulties. Light and sound are essential parts of the education we offer. It enables children to learn about their own senses and how they can use these to make choices in their life and to have an impact on their environment through cause and effect. Processes that we take for granted do not come naturally to our children. Our light and sound room has been a vital part of our day-to-day curriculum, but is now very tired and in need of refurbishment. The support of Winchester Round Table has been absolutely invaluable in allowing us to proceed with this work, and we are eternally grateful."
Theatre's £10,000 windfall thanks to Full Flood Ball. Standing at the heart of the city for 100 years, the Theatre Royal Winchester has now received a cheque for over £10,000 to continue its work. The money, which was raised by this year's Full Flood Charity Ball on April the 5th, totals £10,212.17 and is in aid of the theatre itself, which heavily relies on fundraising. Mark Curtis, Chief Executive at Theatre Royal Winchester, accepted the cheque from Chairman of the Full Flood Ball Committee, Catherine Skinner. The theatre runs various groups and activities, including youth theatre, dance and creative workshops, promoting local artists and providing access to theatre for disabled and disadvantaged groups. Mr. Curtis said, We are really grateful to the Full Flood Ball Committee, who launched our season of parties to celebrate 100 years with a fantastic event full of good humour, fun, style and pizzazz. It's an incredibly impressive amount.
Egg Award is handed out. The prestigious Millennium Egg has been awarded to Charles Barter of the Watercress Company. The egg is Winchester's equivalent to the Lifetime Achievement Oscar for the local economy. It is awarded every year in celebration of local people and organisations who have made a significant and sustained business contribution. Robert Humby, the City Council leader, said, "We are delighted this year to be giving the Millennium Egg to Charles Barter, a director of the Watercress Company. He has been integral to making the annual Watercress Festival in Alsford the success it is today, and in promoting locally grown watercress as a superfood. This reinforces the importance of our rural economy to Winchester."
Hence points a pathway. Hampshire County Council is introducing a new signposting system to make it easier to navigate and explore key destinations by foot. Wayfinding is already popular in cities such as London and Bristol, uses totem-style maps and finger posts to display main destination areas and tourist attractions. The main aim is to improve connectivity between railway stations and popular destinations, so pedestrians find places more easily. The signs will also showcase main attractions, encouraging tourists to visit all areas, increasing footfall and boosting local businesses.
No penalties for drivers flouting law. No tickets have been issued this year to illegal drivers on a pedestrian route through the heart of Winchester, despite a survey revealing that 10 motorists an hour flout the law. Just weeks after a Hampshire Constabulary spokesman said appropriate action would be taken if drivers were spotted using St George's Street, Middlebrook Street and the Lower High Street, that is alongside Marks and Spencer's there, have admitted only issuing 2 fixed penalty notices in the past 18 months, both last year. A Hampshire Chronicle survey last month revealed that 80 drivers in 8 hours illegally used the route, which is designated for taxis, buses and access vehicles only. The ban has been in place for over 20 years since the Brooks Centre was opened, yet the survey revealed that in the space of 8 hours, 39 car and 41 van drivers ignored the law. One driver, who was asked not to be named, said he was unaware of the regulations, despite signs located at the corner of Middlebrook Street and St George's Street and in the High Street by Marks and Spencer. A police spokesman at the time said officers regularly patrol Winchester city centre, and if they see anyone using the bus taxi lane illegally, they will take appropriate action. However, a spokesman last Tuesday said that just because only a few fixed penalty notices have been issued, it doesn't mean officers haven't stopped drivers or spoken to them about the restrictions. Chris Gillam of Winchester Friends of the Earth said he wasn't surprised to learn how many drivers were rule-breaking and thought something needed to be done. "There's no point in having regulations if it's not enforced," he said. The restrictions there have an obvious purpose, and it is being abused. If it is not enforced, the abuse will grow. It only takes a bit of enforcement to stop it altogether. He added, "I think the police generally don't enforce legislation unless they perceive that people are reporting a problem. They are probably very busy and won't do anything unless people point it out." When asked about enforcing the ban, Winchester City Council said that dealing with moving vehicles was a police matter. One retired Winchester police officer, who also asked not to be named, said, "To sort this out, it needs a regular enforcement. I have seen police officers waving drivers through."
Further £6 million to be spent on potholes. Another £6 million is to be spent fixing potholes on Hampshire's roads. The government announced it has allocated the sum to Hampshire County Council as part of a £168 million pot to repair the country's roads following damaging winter weather. Councillor Sean Woodward, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment at the County Council, said, "I am pleased to see that not only has the government recognised the extent of the damage to Hampshire's roads, but also that it is reassured the County Council can spend this money wisely." This £6 million comes on top of the £11.5 million already awarded and is a reflection of the County Council's commitment to long-term investment in the road network, he said. This is the latest in a series of announcements which will see more than £24 billion spent on England's road network between 2010 and 2021, the biggest investment since the 1970s.
Celebrity backing for charity shop overhaul. A charity shop's calls of DIY SOS have been answered by a celebrity guest. TV presenter Nick Knowles from Who Dares Wins visited the Naomi House charity shop in Eastleigh. His visit came while staff from house builders Redrow Homes, which constructed the Abbots Walk development in Winchester, gave the shop a complete makeover for free, taking just 4 days. The Winchester-based Children's Hospice is the firm's charity of the year. Last year, the Eastleigh store raised £30,000 to support its services for youngsters with terminal illnesses.
Talks held over night bus subsidy. Winchester civic chiefs were last night discussing whether to continue subsidising a night bus service. City councillors on the town forum have to decide whether to fund the service for another 2 years starting from September. The service runs from the city centre to Badger Farm, Stanmore, Week and Hairstock on Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and thanks also to our various technical teams. And thank you to our readers, who were Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.